fellow classic TV fans, and welcome to the Season 4 premiere of Retro TV Radio. I'm your host, Pat McCormack. Kent McCord is nothing less than a living legend. It's no secret that this ageless Adam 12 star, along with his co-star and dear friend, the late Martin Milner, inspired many to pursue careers in law enforcement. Not only that, through the vision of Robert Senator and Jack Webb, Adam 12 the series and Kent's performance as Officer Jim Reed helped solidify the television genre known as police procedurals. But McCord's experiences on television and the business itself go far deeper than just this classic show. Just wait until you hear him tell the tale of how his prominent career was kicked off. And that is a pun intended. We not only discuss the buddy cop formula, but laugh about a few ironies along the way. Among other interesting subjects, we also discuss his deep connections to the Screen Actors Guild as the former vice president, his passion and expertise on the state of the industry, and the newest SAG deal will have you not only intrigued, but well educated. Kent pulls no punches as he takes social media, YouTube, and artificial intelligence to task. This, all the while enlightening us on many of the new details of the settlement, which includes his opinion on whether it was a good one or a bad one. Enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast the legendary Kent McCord. Hi, Kent.
How you doing?
Well, I'm doing fantastic because, heck, I'm talking to one of my childhood heroes.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That's always nice to hear.
I was thinking you probably never heard that one before, but...
Well, you know, one of the flattering things of being in this business for a long time is you do get different generations of people who were acquainted with you through our medium, television, or from motion pictures. So, you know, it's always flattering that people have taken the time, no matter what generation, to tune in.
Sure. Well, it's funny because I was thinking about all the different ways I could introduce you, and I was one came across. I was like, I know, I'll say the dashing Kent McCord, and I thought. But coming from a heterosexual guy, I'm not sure how he might take that.
With flattery.
Yes, good. Well, I had just watched that skit of you and Marty on Laugh-In.
Yes.
And it is so good, where you profess as Officer Reed.
I love you.
Yes. Get out of my car.
Well, you know, truthfully, the way that developed was very interesting. Marty lived in Fallbrook, and Marty would come up to the studio and stay in the studio for the time that we shot that particular episode of television. So we never shot on Monday. So Marty would come up Monday night. We'd go to our barber and get our hair cut for that episode on Monday night, and we'd begin on Tuesday morning, and then every other Friday we shot the interior of the car from the two previous episodes. So every other week there was a Friday involved, and so when we were doing the Laugh-In gig, we went from the studio over to NBC, and Marty wanted to get on the road and get back to Fallbrook. He didn't want to have it be too late. And as was my weakness at that point, certain things would set me off with giggling. And that was one of them. And it wasn't planned. And it just happened. It was organic. And I think that's the charm of the thing. And interestingly, that I think we did the first episode of season 5 of Laugh-In and the first episode of season 6. And the same thing happened on season 6, and then there were a couple other times that we were on Laugh-In, and they just let it roll. We thought they were just going to take, you know, the one take that worked, and instead it wound up being the full thing, which is really interesting. Another thing about what happens with television these days and with streaming and the ability to see almost anything, FreeV TV had all 140 episodes of Laugh-In on. And my wife and I, during the pandemic, and being sequestered and careful about where we went and what we did, we started watching Laugh-In. And I realized I had never seen all of the episodes of Laugh-In. I'd see it once in a while, but I hadn't seen them all. And they were all available, so we started at season one. And Laugh-In was on Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock. So we were shooting out of 12 during that whole period of time. And I was in bed by 10 o'clock because you have to be up at 5 and at the studio and the whole thing. And they are so amazingly funny. And I don't know that anybody could ever attempt to, well, they could attempt, but I don't think they could ever come up with the charm and the hilarity that that Laugh-In contains in those original shows. It's just amazing.
Sure. And it's the spontaneity too. I mean,
yeah,
like you were saying, when I watched that, you could tell it was bloopers in real time. And
yeah.
How valuable that must have been to them. They must have just been, oh, this is gold.
Yeah.
I mean, because of course you're these straight lies. You don't play. Well, let me take that back. Even on the show, you were kind of the comic relief. I mean, you would have your deadpan one-liners between calls.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the other end of that, you know, when I turn to Marty and I say I love you, Marty Milner was one of the best things that ever happened to me in life. And our families, when we started doing the show, meshed, and we did vacations together. And, you know, we were down in Fallbrook when, you know, at Marty's, and they were up here. And, you know, we just had one of those kind of relationships. Of course, I came out off of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, and I went on that show in late season 9 and stayed on it until it wrapped in season 14. I was standing in for Ricky to begin with. Rick and I became friends, and I was on the show, and Ozzie started throwing lines at me. But by that time, that show was such a one of a kind. They were shooting it like they shot a movie. It was a one camera show. It wasn't a three camera setup that Lucy and Desi had created with an audience. You know, and it was shot like a movie. So we shot 5 days a week on The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, and that set was such a fun place to be. And Marty set, you know, the people who are at the top of the call sheet are the ones that set the tone on a movie set or a television set. And Marty was just the consummate pro. And, you know, I tell the tale of the first time that Marty and I actually met. I had, of course, knew about Route 66.
Yeah.
And that being a one-of-a-kind show that
yes,
that was created by Burt Leonard, and they shot all over the country. And then I had worked on an episode of Gidget that Marty played the big kahuna on, Sally Field's show, and I was on that episode. But I had never really met Marty face-to-face. And the first morning that we went out to shoot the pilot, we were standing in a parking lot to be picked up to be taken to location, and Marty gave out this great big yawn, and he went, I can never sleep before I start one of these things. And I was so relieved that this professional, since he was like 13 years old and with all of his history of Marjorie Morningstar and the Sands of Iwo Jima, all the movies that Marty had done, that he had, you know, nerves starting this thing, because certainly this young guy who was doing this show, meaning me, I looked at Marty and I said, I couldn't sleep last night. And, you know, I was so relieved that he was so open and honest about beginning this thing. And of course, like I said, from the beginning, we just meshed, and it was a great, great, great fun. We, you know, and to be paid for it on top of it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, it sounds to me like it was just a human being. And it also sounds to me that the rumors are true that Officer Reed really did love Officer Malloy.
Yes, he did.
We can take that to the bank. I mean, again, it goes back to this buddy cop thing, you know, that Mr. Webb obviously had forged with Dragnet. And, of course, you were part of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had the good fortune. I look back at this thing. Yesterday, my wife and I were driving on Sunset Boulevard. And right off of Sunset Boulevard, going into Bel Air, there's a little park called Deneve Park. And you look at it and you go, this possibly couldn't have happened there. And the thing that I'm talking about is this football game that occurred between Elvis Presley and Ricky. And Rick had put together this team. And the night before we did this game, a friend of mine who was going to UCLA and was a wonderful and terrific football player. And as a friend of mine, we went to high school together. I lived with his parents for a while. And Mike had come home from UCLA one night and he said, we're going to play a touch football game. You want to play? And I just finished my freshman football season. And I said, oh yeah, sure. Who's playing? And he said, well, we're going to play on a team with Ricky Nelson. We're going to play Elvis Presley. And I went, oh yeah, Mike, let me know when that happens. You know, and so a couple of weeks later, Mike came home and he said, you know, the game we were talking about, we're going to play it. Tonight we're going to drive into Hollywood and meet Ricky Nelson and, you know, talk about some plays and stuff. And so we drove into Hollywood. I met Rick. The next day we met at the Faisai House at UCLA and we caravaned over to this little park and we played this game. Elvis shows up with all of his guys and we started playing this game It went on until it got too dark because Presley was losing. And we finally had to call the game because of light. And off of that, Red West and Sonny West and Alan Fortas and, you know, we all became friends. And so when we were driving by that turnoff yesterday and I looked at my wife and I said, a left turn here to that little park, and my whole life has changed. You know,
isn't that something?
No, yeah. And my wife and I were dating at that time. By the way, we've been together for 65 years and married coming up this year for 62.
Oh, that's amazing! Wonderful. Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
And even more so, congratulations on winning the football game.
I got a call. I got a call from Red. Just a few months before Red died, and he said, "Pat and I are writing a book. I want to know about the football game. Were there Rams playing in that game?" And I said, "No, Red. And just remember, we won." He said, "Yeah, but it wasn't by much." And so I, you know, Red and I were friends, you know, forever from that point on, and we worked together on a movie called John Goldfarb, Please Come Home, and Room Together when we were doing that film, and then he worked in a film that I did called A Woman's Story. Red came on and did a little thing. And, of course, he was working with Bobby Conrad on Baba Black Sheep. And so we stayed in touch. And Sonny, his cousin, and I were good friends. And Alan, we had Alan Fortas, and it was a nephew of Supreme Court Judge Abe Fortas. And then Jimmy Kingsley, who had been with Presley forever, came over and worked with us on Adam 12 and stood in for Marty and worked on the show for a couple of years. And, you know, so all those guys, we all became, you know, real good friends off of that. It was a fun thing. And then I wound up working on background on a number of Presley films. I think the first location I ever went on was Viva Las Vegas. Well, it was the first location I ever went. Not to think, but
Anne. Well, I got one more question about that game, and I promise I won't go on anymore.
Yeah,
who played quarterback?
You know, I On our team?
On both teams.
Well, I think Ellis was playing quarterback on his team. And we had my friend Mike Hafner, who was the there's a legendary football player named Paul Cameron who came out of UCLA, and Mike had broken all of his freshman records as a freshman at UCLA. So, you know, we were pretty loaded on that front.
So it was fixed, huh?
And, you know, Ricky was a great athlete. You know, when they did trapeze, and then Ricky was one of the top-rated 16-year-old nunders in tennis. I remember I was playing a lot of tennis at a point, and Ricky gave me the doubles lines, and he already gave me a point. You know, I was playing a lot of tennis at the time, I've said before, if that game had been played in the last dozen years, there would have been video of it. There would have, you know, you can't find really anything on it. It was before, you know, this was 1961. And, you know, as the day progressed, that park became surrounded with people. I mean, it was hundreds of people wound up during but it was word of mouth then.
Yep.
Today it would have been put on social media that, you know, the king of rock and roll is playing the prince of rock and roll a football game here on this little postage stamp park, and the street, you know, I mean, you would have had to have traffic enforcement there to control what would have been happening. But, you know, that was then, and, you know, so, yeah.
Simpler times.
Yeah.
But what a great memory, you know, and it's alive in your memories. And now everybody that's listening knows about it. And we can picture who the quarterbacks were. That was my only thing. I need to know who's throwing the ball.
Yeah.
And here's a great tie-in for you, Kent, because I'm just so clever at these. You know, it's funny, but we were talking when we first got on the phone, we were talking about mix, because we're both a couple of mix.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was saying, mix, don't mix. Oh, and that was my bad joke. But I was earlier thinking, I wonder if I should call him Mick Tackler, because you could put any word after Mick and make it work. Like, you know, Mick Garbage Taker Outer. I mean, you know, just the... That one will be edited, maybe. But the reason I came up with that is that the point being, during the show, we're back to the show again, was that you were the guy that always had to chase down the perp.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just a chase down. We're talking a full-on NFL tackle.
I enjoyed those, by the way.
That brings me to the next question. How many of those was actually you?
I would say a good 60-70% of them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then another friend of mine who came out of UCLA, and that we all worked background together, and we're on the Presley pictures together and working background on Ozzy and Harriet, a man named Craig Chutey came on, and Craig did a lot of episodes on camera of Adam 12. As well as you know, doing the stunts and so Craig did some of those things. You know, there weren't a lot of situations that really called for a stuntman. However, I always had the philosophy that stuntmen, you know, are incredibly important on action sets and should make the money. And sometimes actors decide that they're going to do this gag because they're so handy and wind up hurting themselves.
Yep.
So production's very reluctant to let anybody, but just, you know, running after somebody and taking them down is not a, you know, not a real dangerous thing to do.
Maybe. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's, here's the star, one of the stars of the show. Yeah, you go tackle him. I can't imagine somebody in the production would be going, sure, just let Kent tackle him. What could go wrong, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, we had The two times, there were only a couple times I really hurt myself.
Uh-huh.
And not hurt in a bad way, but one time I'm running down an embankment on the back lot, and I can't remember which episode it was. I think there was a body or something, and I'm going down this embankment, and they had a cable that was holding up a phony tree on the back lot. And it was under the underbrush, and I hit that cable and went ass over tea kettle on that deal. And then another time I was chasing somebody, and there was a curb stepping down to the street. We were on the sidewalk, and I'm sure many people have done the same thing, not running or just walking. And the step is there, and you just kind of lose your balance for a second. Well, I totally blew the step and went down and tore up the pant leg on my, at the knee, and just skinned the knee up. But that was really the only kind of injury that I ever suffered doing the show.
It's amazing. I mean, it would seem to me like, okay, well, if we're going to let them do it, let's have at least a couple paramedics on set just in case.
So, we didn't have that in those days.
What? And that ruins my tie-in. Here it comes, Kent.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a crazy question. I'm betting. Well, I'm not betting. I'm not a betting man, but I'm thinking maybe you never had this asked of you before. Has anybody come up to you and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Mantooth, can I have your autograph?"
If I had a nickel for every time that happened, yeah, I'd be a rich man. and the funny thing about it is that Randy and I don't look anything alike side by side, but we're types. And if you know what film does to an individual, it takes you out of the individual and puts you into the typical. And Randy was cast to a type, and Kevin, they even had him kind of tint his hair a little to be on the reddish side. Now, Bob Senator created both Adam 12 and Emergency, and Bob was a genius. And so the formula, if you can call it a formula, certainly worked in both instances. But people used to say that to me all the time about Randy. I said, "No, I'm on Adam 12. Randy's on Emergency." Yeah.
Well, it's so funny because obviously it's the blonde brunette thing, and the buddy cop kind of the Jack Webb influence. But around the turn of the century, which is really weird to say, by the way, folks.
Right.
I had been on General Hospital for a short while, and Randy Mantooth was on an ABC soap as well. I can't remember exactly which one it was. But we'd have these ABC soap events, festivals that we'd attend together, and we made friends with him, and he is just like the sweetest,
yes,
wonderful guy. And he'd be like, I loved my years playing John Gage. If only everybody didn't think I was Kent McCord.
Randy and I haven't talked to him in a long time. We were in Chicago together doing an event, and it's been pre-pandemic, and I think a couple of years pre-pandemic, so it's been that long. But we kind of stay in touch through a mutual friend who was an associate producer on Emergency, Hannah Shearer, and whose father was Jack Webb's attorney for all of Jack Webb's life, so we kind of exchange hellos and everything. And I just got an email from Kevin just recently, saying hello, and they both have wonderful careers. And I know Randy wound up doing a lot of stuff on soaps there for a while.
Yeah, and I know, if I'm not mistaken, he's had some health struggles in the recent past, and we, of course, all send him our best wishes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. He's had a tough go of it, and I'm not versed on the particulars, but I do know that there are, you get to be this point in life, and it's like the old saying is, you know, somebody said that somebody last night, I was watching television, what do you wake up to? And he said, I just like waking up. And, you know, and the other thing is you look at the obits and make sure your name's not there.
I just turned 60 last week, so here comes my third act.
Yeah.
And the running joke is, oh, don't worry, Pat. 60's the new 59.
Yeah. Well, I'm 81 now. And, you know, so this time frame that we're looking at, and when you say, you know, in the last century, you know, more of my life was spent in the last century than it was in this one. But I plan to even them out.
Good.
I had a friend. I have a friend. And he was a race car driver, and he's a motivational speaker now, and he was going through some tough times, and I saw him back at Indianapolis, and you know, and he looked phenomenal, and I saw that he was running in the mini marathon leading up to the Indianapolis 500, one of the events that they hold back there. And he said, I was out running with a guy, you know, and I said, what have you been doing? You know, he says, well, you know, he said, I train and everything. And he says, you know, when you're running, and I was doing a lot of running at the time, and how you'll find a guy who you can pace with, and the guy that you can't keep, he'll run away from you. And then you'll finally find the guy that you can run with, and you'll finish the race. And I went up to this guy, and I thought maybe he was 55 or 60, and he was 70. And I said, what do you do? And the guy said, you know, I live by this philosophy. If you were given a brand new car in perfect working order and were told that was the only car you'd ever have for the rest of your life, would you take care of it? And that's the way I live my life. My body is the only one I'm going to have, and I take care of it. You know, and I've always thought that was a wonderful, you know, kind of goal to try to live by.
Sure, sure. Well, and I've seen recent pictures of you, sir, and you're looking pretty good, man.
Well, I try to keep busy.
Well, that's good. What do you do? I mean, do you have a routine, an exercise routine, or something? Or
well, we get, you know, my wife and I get to the gym, and my father lived a very hard life, and I think the only reason he lived as long as he did is because of hard work. But I keep busy. I just, you know, there's no one thing that I'm doing. The pandemic threw kind of a block to all of the definite routine that I had. You know, the gym three to five times a week, bicycling, and really I'm kind of recovering from that time off. It was the first time in my entire life. Since I was a youngster, and my dad brought home a set of weights when I was 9 years old, and we had them out in the garage, that I really laid off of the kind of routine that I've done. Now, whether it was good or not, I had it in my head, I don't want to compromise my immune system by going into a gym and dragging it down. And the other thing is, all the gyms here in Southern California, well, you're up
Central Coast, yeah.
Central Coast. You know, all the gyms closed their doors, and ours did for almost a year. And on my 80th birthday, I went a few days before my 80th birthday to our gym. I saw that it was open again to check it out, and I decided, you know, it's an amazing gym, this one facility, and I've belonged to this chain since 1984, and it's gone under, you know, different names through that. And I've always had my membership there. And this one is just the biggest gym you've ever seen, with the fewest people in it at any given time. And I said, why, how do you keep this one open? And they said, it's the lost leader for the one, two freeway off ramps up the road, and it's the overflow, and they just keep it going. I said, I'm surprised you guys survived the pandemic. So anyway, I started back on my routine on my 80th birthday, which was September 26th. You know, so I am still working to get back there. It's funny how when you're at this point in life, how difficult it is to train hard. Everything hurts.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. The heck with that no pain, no gain thing. This is no pain. I'm not coming back thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard it said just recently, as a matter of fact, that every hour you work out adds an hour to your life.
Well, I would think that. Yeah. I certainly would buy into that. You know, you've got to, you know, your whole being is geared to some kind of work.
Sure.
And if you're sedentary and you're just sitting around, that's not a good formula for
survival,
a long life, you know.
Yeah.
You know, now something may come along that shortens it, but certainly if you do all of the things you do with diet and exercise, you're edging your bet there. If you've got, you know, if your biological clock says you're out of here at 90, there's not much you can do about that, but you certainly can continue to live a productive life up until that point. I'd rather spend a year dying than be dying for the next 20 years.
Right. So. Right. So when's your next baby due?
Yeah.
You can hear it, folks.
Yeah.
He's still got it. Well,
yeah.
Hey, gang, just a quick reminder that you can also find a slideshow version of this podcast on my Golden Rage of TV YouTube channel. There, you'll also find all my other Retro TV Radio celebrity interviews in my Pods with Picks playlist. The Golden Rage of TV channel is jam-packed with various other nostalgic classic TV goodies. You'll find multiple seasons of my Retro TV Trivia series, which pays tribute to literally hundreds of classic TV shows and their stars. These include many trivia tidbits that you may just not have known. You'll also find my music playlist of rock guitar renditions of some of our favorite classic TV theme songs, all arranged and performed by yours truly. There's also a Happenings playlist, which houses all my celebrity memoir and merchandise reviews, as well as other promotions and current events. But much like this podcast, my Golden Rage of TV YouTube channel relies on the support of folks just like you. I'm talking about a simple one-click, no-obligation subscription. These really keep the wheels turning to continue bringing you more and more nostalgic retro TV entertainment. So please subscribe and help keep this effort charging ahead. Again, it's a simple, no-cost way to show your support for what I do. It would, of course, be greatly appreciated, and especially if you share it with a friend. Thank you in advance, folks, and now back to our show. You are the first interview that I am having since Screen Actors Guild got an agreement.
Uh-huh.
Interviews during that time were really tough.
Yeah.
Can't talk about anything. I'm talking, well, who was it? I think it was Loretta Swit.
Yeah.
Don't you dare think I can't talk about MASH, because I'm not promoting it. Damn it. You know?
Yeah.
And yet, well, it really gagged me, and it was very difficult. And so, I just want to say, Adam 12, Adam 12, Adam 12.
Yeah.
You know, Stargate, 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 Stargate.
You know, the how do I put this? First of all, that was to pretend. You know, I spent 4 years as a board member, officer, committee member of the union.
Yes.
And the idea that mentioning Adam 12, that's been off the air since 1975, but not off the air, is going to help Universal's bottom line was somewhat
ludicrous. Yeah, I agree.
You know, so we are now in the process. I'm waiting to receive the contract to take a look at it. But the problem with what the Guild has done is we're in an area now. You know, if you know the history of the Guild, formed in 1933, first contract achieved in 1937. It was a 10-year contract. In 1948, another negotiation for an agreement. 1960, the television thing is the big deal. Movies going to television and a health plan. And the companies paid $2.5 million to Universal, and the Guild gave them the right to show all pre-60s movies on television without compensation to any performer.
Mm.
And so that was a huge, and there was a strike during that period of time in 1960. Now, I got in right after 1960, you know, so my career begins there. And then in 1972, in 70, I ran for the board. We all got wiped out. 71, in 72 agreement, I was the one person off of our slate that got elected to the board of directors of the Screen Actors Guild. And I participated in the 1974 Screen Actors Guild contract negotiation, and Lou Wasserman was at the table at that time, you know, and then I participated throughout, you know, up until 2008 in negotiations. And every time there's a new, in 80, when we were talking about home video and we were talking about HBO and how do we participate in those platforms. And then in 83, we talked about cable television and all this product that's running on cable. And they asked us, please help us grow this infant cable television. And we will negotiate these terms, you know, once it's matured. And we, you know, we helped them out there, and we're still waiting, you know. And, you know, it's 40 years later, that, you know, 43 years later. And we're looking at how we got hosed in that agreement. And so now you come up and there's this thing with AI. There are all these platforms out there. There's all this streaming. Adam 12 right now is on three different places.
This very second too.
Yes. Called Feevee.
Right.
TV. And another one called MeTV. And then a streaming on Freevee TV, which is the best of them all, by the way, the Freevee streaming. They haven't sped up or stretched or
good.
Done any of the things with, you know, that they have with the other outlets. And, you know, the other outlets do that just so that they can gain time for commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so all of this product that we have worked in, and by the way, you know, one of the most delightful things, again, you know, that somebody needs to begin watching, 12 seasons of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet are streaming right now. And they're in a couple different places. Freevee TV has some of them. Prime has some of them. And then I'm trying to remember where else, but we have started watching in 12 seasons. We have started watching from episode one, my wife and I. All of this was when Ozzie and Harriet came on television, moving over from radio. They had been on radio from 1944 to 1952 when they came on television, as Dragnet had been on radio and then moved over to television. But in 1952, I was 10 years old. And a huge fan of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, as all of my family was. It was truly family entertainment, and you needed to sit down and watch this. And it's up there. And so there were 435 episodes of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. The first 12 seasons are available to watch. We're at about episode 26 of the first season. And I sit there and just, you know, having become part of the family and watching this and then taking me back to those days when, you know, I can hear my mother's voice calling me to come in because Ozzie and Harriet was beginning. And, you know, those are things that if anybody's out there listening to this and they want pure family entertainment that has a lot of really good humor to it, they need to watch The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, and also the growth of Ricky from little Ricky, you know, with the twinkle in his eye and I don't mess around boy, to becoming one of the challengers of Elvis Presley for the supremacy over rock and roll.
And football.
Yeah, and football.
Oh, man. Well, and of course, they brought in Kent McCord. I mean, That's wonderful. But, you know, just getting back to what you were saying, and I mean, we don't have to talk about this too much. I just wanted to get a quick answer on what you think. Did the Actors Guild get a good deal?
No. Mm. No, they didn't. You know, anytime you put the burden on the performer to seek, you know, where they're seeking consent by the performer to be able to digitize their image. We're in a place right now, go on YouTube and put in anybody's name, By the way, backtrack for a minute. When Dominic called my guy, who you had contacted, I said, what's a good reason for doing Pat's show? Dominic said, you can tell people you're not dead. Now, the reason he said that is because on YouTube, on seven things that are running on there, I'm dead. And YouTube does nothing about this kind of,
yes,
fallacy that's sitting out there.
It's disgusting.
I get a call, my wife does, from a cousin living in Minnesota who leaves a cryptic message. Please call me. And we call her and she said, oh God, you know, it was on YouTube that you done. And then I get another call. I just had a 60th year reunion from my high school class and plus three, because I graduated in 1960 and because of the pandemic, we didn't have one. And this class has stayed together. We've had a 5-year reunion since we graduated high school.
Wow.
And all these friends that I grew up with and, you know, and so I get a call from one of the organizers and he says, oh, thank God, how you answered. And I said, why, what's up? And I'm thinking it's related to the reunion. And he says, oh, a friend of mine, a retired El Monte police officer who's living in Arizona, just called me and said, did you hear that Kent died overnight from cancer? And he said, no, I'll call. And so he calls me and he says, thank God you answered. So, and then one of my best friends growing up who lived down the street from me calls me and says, I'm at the hotel for the reunion. When are you going to get here? And I said, we're just headed out and I'll be there within, you know, the next 45 minutes. And he walks into the thing and one of our classmates comes up to him and says, isn't it tragic that Kent died? And he says, really? I just talked to him about 20 minutes ago. And so there's all this junk that's out there, and it's all clickbait.
Yeah.
And it's on a whole lot of actors who are out there.
Sure.
And the same thing happens with our images where they're taking clips, by the way, which there is a reuse of clips provision within the Screen Actors Guild codified basic agreement. There's a law in California called Civil Code 3344 that governs the use of your name, voice, likeness, or signature without your consent. And all of these things are there to protect the performer. But when it comes down to product that most of our members work in, they don't own the copyright. So only the copyright holder can get a hold of YouTube and say, take this down.
Mm.
And now when we're into this thing of artificial intelligence and the ability to put words in people's mouths and to do stuff, this thing has to be ironclad. And the problem with what has happened here, and I said I was waiting for the contract to get here, it's only going to be a summary of the contract. It's not the full contract. And I have friends who are asking to see the entire artificial intelligence language so that we know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And what does consent mean? And what is happening with clip use? And why are we not enforcing that for all of our members when they're on YouTube? Oh, and so YouTube did $28 billion in business last year. It's the second most clicked on website behind Google.
Yep.
Of them all. You know, now there are things that are up there that are really quite flattering and wonderfully produced and everything. But if I attempted to do the same thing that people I don't know nor Universal knows with Adam 12, I'd get sued.
Mm-hmm.
Universal would be on the phone saying, you need to do this or not, you know, to get it down. People who aren't part of your life are taking your image and they are exploiting it. And this artificial intelligence is going to be something that is going to just, there's no going back.
No.
The genie's out of the bottle. And you better get it right the first time around, because as I said, when they came to us and said, help us grow this infant, meaning cable television, and that is gone. They're never, ever going to give up the advantage they have over performers in that platform. And this artificial intelligence thing of being able to change, you know, things that you've said and stuff, and to exploit the actor. It's a thing that I looked at this morning. Somebody said the top people in the industry, the top earners, the Tom Cruises, people like that are going to be able to protect themselves. But the other thing that I'm a little dismayed at after all my years on the Screen Actors Guild Board of Directors and dealing with these things is that on this contract that is going to change the industry forever, they're only sending out a summary. And no person would sign a contract obligating them for the rest of their lives under an agreement without reading every word of what they were signing. So, you know, in my estimation, no, it's not a good deal. I don't think it should be ratified. It will be because there's not a contract that's ever been sent out with the stamp of approval of the board of directors that's ever been turned down. But, you know, it's I only have to worry about what I have out there at this point in my life.
Well, gosh, you know, I'm so glad that I asked this question because I knew of your past with the board. And now that I know what Dominic said, it's even better because we can confirm that Kent McCord is indeed still alive. Yes.
But I could be an AI created.
Well, if you have a problem with that, you can come after me, folks. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other thing is, don't gratify these channels on YouTube. They're disgusting, you know, and it is true, unfortunately, negative.
Yeah.
I mean, look at any newspaper, any news feed. It's all negative headlines, all of it.
Yeah.
And that's what draws the people in to want to look. You know, it's like a car wreck. You got to look, you know.
Well, I said a long, long time ago when we were dealing with this, at the creation of YouTube, I said it's basically a visual Napster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Napster basically destroyed the record industry, the file sharing and stuff that went on.
It did.
And you know, and in an Interguild Council meeting probably 15 years ago, right at the dawn of YouTube, I looked at that and I said, they're taking copyrighted material, posting it for people to look at. And it's like what was happening with file sharing with Napster. So, you know, I say, why don't you allow each individual actor to exploit their own image without threat of suit for doing so? And, you know, it's an amazing thing that we're in when you're a performer in this day and age where all this stuff can be reproduced. I've said for years that the industry would love to get back to 1939.
Yeah.
The greatest year in motion pictures, I think, that's ever been done, including, you know, The Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind, Stagecoach, and on down. And difference between then and now is that then they paid the actor once, the director once, and the writer once, and the crew, and they never had to cut them another dime. You know, they owned it, and it went out there, and, you know, and that's all they had to pay the actors. Then the negotiations happened because of television and the reproduction. You know, when you think about the concept of residuals, think about what happens in theater. John Barrymore is going to do John Barrymore starring in Hamlet. I don't know if he ever did. I think he did. But it's on the marquee. And he goes and he contracts for 8 performances a week. And so he gets paid for 8 performances a week, and it runs whatever time it runs. At the end of it, he packs his Hamlet, you know, book and his wardrobe and then he goes away. And you never see him again in Hamlet until he decides to do it again. Now, when the Industrial Revolution came along and they created film and the ability to capture images, all this stuff, we're looking at things on Turner Classic Movies, the silent stuff, you know, that's 105 years old now, 110. And it's going to be there for another 110 years to look at. And you'll be able to see those performances. And you know, what Ted Turner did taught the industry a lesson. He bought MGM and he got the library. He sold the physical lot of MGM, kept the library, restored all those films, and created 3 networks, TBS, TNN, and Turner Classic Movies. And so all of that product sits out there and is exhibited, you know, for all that older stuff. They owe the performers nothing. It's just amazing. So,
well, you know, gosh, Kent, thank you. That it needed to be explained to the layman by someone that really knows their stuff. And clearly we have him on the line. I mean, it's fantastic. And I applaud you for obviously knowing the ins and outs and having lived it. And it's just, yeah, it's pretty scary. Let's just keep our fingers crossed and move forward, keep exercising, all of that.
Well, I told some friends, you know, what the Guild needs to concentrate on now is informing its members how they can use the fair use clause that's embedded in the federal government to their own advantage. You know, what's fair use? If I put an episode of Adam 12 up on KentMcCord.com and I do an educational thing and say, this is what was happening behind the scenes and this is how the episode was created. Steve Cannell went out and rode around with the sergeant and freelanced for, you know, every call, you know, that night that he was in the car and came up with this story. Is that free fair use? Does Universal have the right to tell me I can't educate the population about how Adam 12 was made and run every episode? Because every episode of Adam 12 was on YouTube at one point.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if it's still there. I haven't looked. I hate to even click on these things because it's kind of a...
With your eyes closed.
Yeah. It's a kind of a self-perpetuating issue with, you know, the more clicks, somebody's getting paid.
Yeah.
So...
Well, it's a two-headed dragon, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a YouTube channel, and I put all my episodes up on YouTube, and I do. But what I do is tributize.
That's different. You're not pilfering a library and re-editing product.
Right.
And then putting your own spin on that.
Right.
You're doing something. This is, you know, as an exhibition platform, that's a far different thing.
Yeah.
Than reaching into something where there's a collectively bargained agreement on reuse of photography and then putting something up where I put in Clint Eastwood's name, put in Marty Sheen's name, put in Randy Mantoux's name, go through the whole thing and see what kind of product sits there and see how someone has taken that product and created their own commercial exploitation of that product. And it's basically being done with impunity.
Yeah. Or they call it editorial.
Yeah. Well, you know, if I call YouTube, and by the way, on the thing about me, you know, my dying on this thing, somebody did contact YouTube and inform them of the seven platforms that they found. And it's still there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of looking at
freedom of speech. He's dead. And I said it and I can say whatever I want because this is America.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people go on and say some people are dead and they cause, you know, and they say, well, that kind of is a harmless BS. Well, it wasn't to my it wasn't to my classmate's adult daughter who called her crying.
No.
That I had died.
Yeah.
And you know, or my wife's cousin who called in a panic, you know, so those are the kinds of things that get put out there. And, you know, it's like, why did you climb that mountain? You know, well, because it was there. So people think that, well, I can have fun with this and I get it. I can do it, you know.
But take the high road.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, you've heard of that, right? Well, it doesn't get any clicks. Look, I'm the devil's advocate here. It's like, okay, but my YouTube channel, but everybody will tell you that the hundreds of videos that I have that are up there, all are to tributize, to send the love of what you guys did in classic television and point out things that maybe you didn't know. All of it, lighthearted, uplifting, you know, that's my MO, and so I use it for that.
No, there's no doubt that, hear what I'm saying. If I did the same thing that many of these things exhibit, if I turned my career into a cottage industry exploited on a Kent McCord channel on YouTube, I would get cease and desists in a heartbeat, because they have my telephone number and my address. When I brought this up years ago, the word I got back is they're not interested. They're chasing the current stuff and they're not interested in chasing down the old stuff.
Hmm.
And so it's really kind of a funny thing when you look at, I've been doing this for 61 years now. And to watch the progress of this, and also having sat in on all of these negotiations that are there to protect the performer from exploitation, is in this new universe, is somewhat dismaying that other people can exploit you, but you may not exploit yourself. Think about that. Think about how,
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's just like what the Guild said when they said, well, you can't go out and talk. I had a personal appearance I was going to do, and because of the pandemic continuing on, and my wife and I go nowhere where we're in public where we don't mask. To this day, I've just talked to a good friend of mine who just is recovering from COVID. They got a little careless. And, and so when we go to the market or we go to a mall or, when we're closing in on any place where there's a lot of people, we up the mask and, and try to be very careful. Now, this is where we're going to jump back because I just lost my train of thought. I was attacked by COVID all of a sudden.
Doing battle in so many fronts here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look. I am so glad that I opened that can of worms because it really needed to be talked about. I had been feeling the effects of it with my interviews, so have my interviewees. And clearly we're talking to an authority here, folks, that knows the score. And, again, fingers crossed.
I know where we were headed. I got into the reason why I didn't go on this personal appearance was because of both my neighbors got on airplanes to go somewhere and came back and both had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, doing this appearance is one thing. It's getting there.
Yeah.
That's the other, to go to LAX and get on an airplane and,
yep.
But when it was during the strike that I was going to do this appearance, and they said, well, you can't promote Adam. I said, what?
Yeah.
Well, you can't, and you can't.
Don't say it. Don't
pictures, s- you know, with of Adam. I said, are you kidding me? And you've signed interim agreements with, the performers are out doing this, and you can't separate the two. I'm sorry, I'm tied to that, for the rest of my life, and it's not like it's gonna enhance, like I said earlier, Universal's bottom line,
right?
That I mentioned Adam 12. So,
well, what it all comes down to is the fact that the works that you did are all incredibly full of talent. You're just a talented guy, and you just put it out there, but you took it one step further, and you became an activist for good. In real life for these people, not just as a cop on TV, yeah. But,
I'll jump in here for a second because I come by it honestly. When my father was dying, my dad said, boy, without the union, your mother and I would have had nothing. And he was a boilermaker. He welded all of his life. He was a hardworking man. And that Boilermakers Union gave him a pension. And, so union was always in my blood, going to union picnics on Labor Day, and that kind of, that kind of upbringing. And when I was a contract player at Universal and starting Adam 12, there were some things that happened on the show from management. And I showed up at a Screen Actors Guild membership meeting at the Palladium in Hollywood here and got to a microphone. And I said, if this is happening to me, I'm starring in a show. And if this is happening to me, what's happening to the day player?
Yeah.
And so I was invited to address the board, and then I was approached to run, and I went, yeah, okay. And so, you know, that began my journey with the Screen Actors Guild.
Well, I mean, it's fantastic.
And by the way, if you want a seat at the table with management, you better be a member of a union.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's the way you get heard. You know, going in as an individual, they'll just blow you off.
No. It's a good union. And it's like you were saying, you better be. But, okay, so there's your reputation. You're living up to it, Kent, as one of the nicest people in show business. And I don't know if you've never heard that one before, Mr. Mantooth, but it's true.
Thank you. I'll tell Captain Cord when I see you.
Yes, please do. start an IV with lactate and ringers, and I'll meet you there.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, I have a very dear friend by the name of Kathy Garver.
Yes.
And I was texting with her just a couple days ago, and I said, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to interview Kent McCord. And she said, oh, Kent, he is such a nice guy, ..
Yeah.
For a cop.
Yeah.
And I went,
She did an episode with us with Barbara Hale playing her mother and Bill Williams playing a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know.
And she was a bad girl.
Yeah. And she was,
the anti-sissy is what I called it.
Yeah, she's a wonderful woman.
She really, really is. My Energizer Bunny is what I call her, because she just goes and is just my inspiration. And now you two are both my inspirations, Mr. McCord, and this has just been fantastic. I could not have asked for a better interview. And yes, folks, he's still alive, obviously.
Yeah.
So as far as this podcast goes, we're going to let Mr. Kent McCord get back out on his beat. Ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful, I'm going to say it, dashing Kent McCord. Thank you, sir.
Well, you're quite welcome, Pat. This was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on the Season 4 premiere of the Retro TV Radio Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and leave a positive rating. It all helps. You can follow me on social media at Golden Rage of TV on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, and on X at Golden Rage of TV 1. Once again, this is your host, Pat McCormack, and thanks for listening to Retro TV Radio.